What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Book of Joe podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome back. It's the latest edition of the Book of Joe podcast with me, Tom Verducci, and of course, Joe Madden. And Joe, I'd like to continue the discussion we've had, and it's been a really good one, and actually all of baseball has been having it, about how to keep pitchers healthy. And we have the ultimate guest, especially for a podcast that loves golf almost as much as baseball. Nobody better to talk about this issue than the great Greg Maddux, literally the winningest pitcher alive. And he pitched 23 years in the major leagues and more than 5,000 innings. We are going to get to Greg Maddux in our second segment. And right now, Joe, I want to review what we talked about in terms of velocity and keeping pitchers healthy. I'd mentioned that 18 of the top 21 hardest throwing starting pitchers in the last 5 years have broken down. Well, you can make it 19 out of 21 now because Bobby Miller of the LA Dodgers is now on the IL. That's a 90% attrition rate. I went back and I looked at the guys who have average velo, which is between 93 and 94. Their attrition rate is about 60%. So there's no question that throwing harder puts pitchers more at risk. So, Joe, you've heard all the data. You see what's going on in the game. Do you have suggestions about how baseball can, obviously you're not going to stop it, but at least mitigate the risk of injury?
Well, I mean, this is, we talked about it, the velocity and all that other stuff. You just brought it back up. It's still tried and true pitching. It's going to be, you just can't put the velocity back in the genie bottle, right? You just don't want to do that. You've come so far, right? So you can't just overlook it, put it back, whatever. However, it always starts in the minor leagues for me. And the program that gets these guys to the point that they're throwing 100 miles an hour, I don't think they innately do that. I mean, that's a rare occurrence when a guy has an arm that just, God says, here's 100 miles an hour. I can see Aroldis Chapman as an example, being that guy just based on his size, whatever. But at some point, I don't know if it's the training techniques. It goes all the way back to when they're a little bit younger. We don't even care that kids in high school are getting Tommy John surgery anymore. It's okay because the carrot is that eventually they're going to get drafted, given a lot of money. And of course, it's always going to be about money and the perception about winning, but you don't win because these guys are keep getting hurt. Roundabout answer. I still like pitching taut, not throwing taut. Greg's going to be a perfect example of that. And one of his pitching coaches that he loves is a good friend of mine, Dick Pohl. And I don't understand why that's not taught. I mean, going back to recently, even with the Angels watching bullpens, I could honestly say there was some, because there wasn't many 100-mile-an-hour dudes there, so there was a lot of like pitching, shaping, hitting corners, moving the ball around, things like that. And the ability to pitch into the sixth or seventh inning the third time through, because I have more weapons and I don't run out of gas because I'm just, I got my the pedal to the floor on every particular pitch. So the answer is teach pitching. Teach. I know we've talked, we had the mechanical dissertation too, but I mean, my buddy Jimmy Kernel, and I gotta give him credit, man. He keeps throwing me pictures where pitchers' arms are way behind their head. It's almost like they're over rotated on the top. And he, every, like the kid with Atlanta, he just showed me pictures of recently. It's so
Spencer Strider. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Joe. I mean, you can look at this, and I call it forearm flyout, where that the hand and forearm get way too far beyond the head. You can see injuries about to happen before they actually do. You made a lot of good points there, Joe. And you mentioned Dick Pohl, one of Greg's best pitching coaches. I remember Greg telling me that when he was in trouble, he never thought about throwing harder. He thought about locating better. Mm-hmm. And we have to get back somehow to that philosophy about pitching and not throwing. But you're right. It's hard to put the genie back in the bottle. Everybody's chasing velo because it is harder to hit. I get it. I actually think, Joe, we're at a point here where signing up to be a pitcher, it's basically like signing up to be a hang glider or a rock climber. It's inherently risky. And you sign up knowing what that risk is. You're going to push the envelope on velocity, knowing that you're a breakdown waiting to happen, because the body just cannot withstand the upper limits of velocity that we're seeing.
So how many guys do you have to sign? How many pitchers do you have to get ready in a major league season? Because you know the attrition is going to occur.
Absolutely. It's a great point. It does become a war of attrition. And let me bring up this mm-hmm. hypothetical situation. Sure. You've got Paul Skeens now within the Pirates system, pitched at LSU. Upper 90s, 100 miles an hour. He throw the ball through a brick wall. He is just dominating AAA hitters. For the life of me, I don't understand why he's there in AAA. You know, right now, college baseball, especially if you're in the SEC, it's like the equivalent, I think, of AA baseball, minor league baseball. The instruction that these kids are getting is amazing. For a guy who throws, again, upper 90s, and if you watch Paul Skeens pitch, his mechanics are not clean. He picks the ball up in the loaded position with his elbow. In other words, his elbow raises above his back shoulder. That's inherently stressful. I'm not saying he's a breakdown waiting to happen, but it is a bit of a red flag that you look at. And given what we've talked about, we've seen all this data, when starting pitchers are throwing in the upper 90s without clean mechanics, I don't know why the Pittsburgh Pirates don't bring him up right now. Because, Joe, you put him in the Pirate rotation right now, he's one of the 10 best pitchers in Major League Baseball. His stuff is that good. I don't think he has anything to prove by blowing the ball by AAA hitters. And that clock is ticking, as it is with all young pitchers, not just hard throwers.
Well, I mean, being all that that we're going to get all these guys trying to throw 100 miles an hour. That's what organizations want. There's still a limited amount of those guys too, but you know they're eventually going to break down almost 100, like you said, 90% of the time. So why? Okay, let's get those guys. We're still gonna go sign those guys. We want those guys, and we're gonna try our best to keep them healthy as long as we possibly can. But in the meantime, why don't we get more guys that are more attuned to pitching? Guys that maybe are in that 91 and 93 range, maybe hit 94 on occasion, but know how to shape pitches, hit corners, hit edges, have multiple pitches that they could attack hitters with the third time in through the batting order. Why not try to build a cachet of those two? They're more easily readable or findable. You could find these guys in every university, even in high schools, of course, junior colleges. So maybe it might be wise to like, yeah, we still want this animal, which is what we wanted when I was coming up. And at that time, Charlie Kerfield threw 97 miles an hour, 96, and that was considered heavy in the early 80s when he was at the Yavapai Junior College. But then again, I could just go up and down a list of the guys that pitched. I mean, look at Mark Langston. How good was Langley? And Langley was a low 90 kind of guy, maybe a little bit higher than that on occasion, but his ball had great low. I caught him in Boulder. Great low carry than this outstanding curveball and a changeup that nobody ever talked about. And that's why Langley was able to, plus he was a great athlete. So why not build both models? Why do we have to just go after one? Because you know the one's probably going to break down, and you have to have this backup plan with guys that you have to believe are going to be more consistently healthy than the other.
Great points, Joe. And just to back up your points, what if someone like Greg Maddux was available for the draft this year? We're talking about a high school pitcher at 6 feet tall, maybe 160, 170 pounds, throwing right around 90, maybe topping out at 90. He went in the second round of the draft. Mm-hmm. And what kind of scout is going to beat the drums for a pitcher like that today? A 17-year-old throwing 90? I don't know. But it's a fascinating discussion. And when we get back, we will continue it with the man we just talked about. Greg Maddux will join us to talk, of course, golf and baseball, two of our favorite subjects, right after this.
Hope you could help me. Hope you could help me.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Book of Joe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Book of Joe.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we promised you the winningest pitcher alive, and here he is, Greg Maddux, one of our favorites. And one of our favorite topics is golf, Greg, so I'm glad you're joining us from the Invited Celebrity Classic. It's actually a PGA Tour Champions event where you've got 78 PGA Tour champions in the field and 40 celebrities from the sports and entertainment world, and Greg Maddux is one of them. It's this weekend, April 19th to 21st, a beautiful Las Colinas Country Club in Irving, Texas. Greg, thanks for joining us. Tell me, I know you've loved golf for a long time, had a lot of chances to play when you were playing Major League Baseball. How much do you play now compared to when you were playing MLB?
Well, actually, I play a little bit more now. I don't have to go to the park anymore. So, I got my group of guys back in Vegas, and, we got the second, third tee time every day, and try to get out there at least four or five times a week and enjoy retirement.
So that means your game is better, right?
No, it's the same. Just because you play more doesn't mean you get better. But, you know, I like the game. I love playing. I like watching it on TV. I loved watching the Masters last week. And it's pretty cool coming down here to Las Colinas and, you know, playing with all the senior players. I mean, we watched these guys in our clubhouse in the 90s for like 10 years, you know, when they were out doing their thing. So it's kind of our fantasy camp week this week.
Very cool. I got to ask this, Greg, when you're in a tournament like this, does it, I don't know if it replaces or come close to the competitive itch that you had as a major league pitcher?
Not really. This is just fun. You know, I mean, pitching's what I did. That, you know, that was how I made my living. And, you know, it was all about, you know, seeing how good you can be on the mound. And, you know, golf is pure pleasure, just fun. And, you know, I don't want to make it too stressful. You know, I want to sit back, enjoy the game and enjoy the company.
Very cool. Well, you've got a great one and a great course this weekend. I'm sure you will enjoy it. Meanwhile, I'm sure besides watching the Masters, you've probably followed some of the chatter around Major League Baseball this year with as it relates to the breakdowns of Major League pitchers, especially when it comes to elbow injuries and velocity. You are a guy who pitched 23 years, more than 5,000 innings. Greg, how many times were you on the injured list?
8 days. I missed the first 8 days of kind of messed my back up the last week of spring training. And I think I ended up starting like the seventh game of the season, something like that, 1 year. But pretty fortunate to never have any serious injuries. And, you know, I guess all those shoulder exercises paid off when I was, you know, back in the day when I was doing it.
Yeah, and pretty good mechanics helped too, I'm sure. So tell me, Greg, as a observer of the sport and obviously knowing pitching so well, how do you explain the accelerated rate of breakdowns, what you're seeing in the major leagues? What are some of your theories?
Well, I just think, you know, being around a lot of young college guys and high school guys, it's all about the velo. You know, it's all about how hard can I throw it? What can I do to throw it and get my spin rates up and all that? And that's kind of what most of the pitchers are kind of shooting for. Now, I think when we were growing up, we were learning how to pitch. We were learning how to locate our fastball and change speeds. You know, we threw hard enough to have success. We weren't trying to force extra velocity. We were trying to force extra pitch selection and location and movement and game planning and all those things. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it. Also, I think, you know, the kids today, they play year round. I mean, when we were growing up, played a lot of basketball, played a little bit of football, played all the sports, played baseball for 4 months a year. You know, I think the guys now are playing, you know, 10, 12 months a year, you know, with all the club ball going on and the travel and all that. So, you know, that's a lot of throws from the time you're 15 to 22, you know, when you've been playing year round like that. So there's only so many throws in your arm, and it doesn't seem like they take the time off that we took.
I love the liberal arts approach where you're doing more than one thing and participating in more than one sport. It comes right down to even having different coaches with different philosophies and different attitudes and the different kind of people that you have to cohabitate with. So I love that approach. As curiously though, I mean, with all this stuff going on and all the training regimens, and you've been around it, I know you've been to different camps, or you've talked to different guys, whatever, but briefly, your routine. I mean, I'm just curious, like your routine as a major league starter for that many years. Okay. You're starting today. What is today? Wednesday, right? You start today, then up until your next start. What did your routine look like?
Well, I mean, obviously Thursday I would be pretty sore and tired from pitching, you know, the day before. So I took it pretty easy. I would do like an easy 30-minute bike ride, maybe a 40-minute walk. Didn't do a whole lot the day after. Kind of rest and recovery day. And watch a little video for my next start in 5 days or 4 days. And Tuesday, then you would start to take care of your body, do what you have to do for your arms and legs. Did the shoulder exercises every day, regardless. And had your side day that day. And, you know, that was to try to improve on wasn't as good as you wanted it to be your last start. And then, you know, stick to your strengths, which was locating fastballs and have a feel for your changeup. You know, third and fourth day was, again, taking care of your body, doing your legs, your abs and all that stuff. And, you know, getting your game plan ready for when you have to pitch on Monday.
On the side day specifically, when you were out there, whatever the work was, but you were the way you pitched, you had to be very specific in your work on that side day. Yeah. And did you ever skip the side day as the season went on? Did you have to cut back on your throwing at any point?
Absolutely. yeah, if my arm didn't feel right, then I would totally skip the side day. And I would throw balls maybe 10 feet away against the outfield wall, you know, just to get some exercise in with it. But, you know, yeah, I was not afraid to skip a side day, that's for sure. But I enjoyed throwing on the side.
Sure.
You know, you need to, you know, I enjoyed spending that time with my coach and, you know, having a good side day and sitting down there in the bullpen talking ball while the other team's taking batting practice. You know, that was some of the funnest days of the year.
Did you, like, were you a weightlifter? Did you run a lot in between starts? What was your method of staying in shape? You talked about walking the day after whatever, but
yeah.
Did you have anything more exact than that?
Mostly sprints, very little distance.
Okay.
You know, I think I did mostly sprints, a lot of power shagging, believe it or not. Enjoyed during batting practice going out in the outfield and power shagging and mostly running sprints. That was it. I did enough running where if I had to run the bases,
yes,
and say score a run, then I wanted to be able to, you know, come out next inning without, you know, being winded or anything like that.
Plus, so, you could hit, so you had to take some BP too. That was part of your program back then too.
Yeah. BP, yeah. Home run derby for the pitchers. Yeah. A lot of fun doing that. Get your bunts down and see how far you can hit it.
So, I mean, but you guys were so athletic. It was a big, I mean, everything you're talking about there was like kind of almost like almost a position player routine in between.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of different things. I love the shagging part of it. Like, guys don't, I'm not banging on anybody right now, but that a lot of that is not how it works these days. And I just prefer like the athletic, the normal body movement routine kind of a thing that you're describing right there. I don't even know how much, you know, back then you had to run with your pitching coach a lot of times too. They would be out there watching that whole thing. And
yeah,
some of that, I just think it's getting to the point where it's way too lopsided and not really incorporating things like that that we had done in the past that I think are really more vital than is realized.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know on Sundays we had pitchers infield where, you know, Smoltz would play short, I'd go to second. We had Avery at first, and, you know,
yeah,
we sat there and played the infield on Sundays because that was an optional hitting day for the guys. So, you know, we looked – yeah, we had a lot of fun being a baseball player, not just a pitcher.
Right.
Hey, Greg, give me your idea on how you treated velocity, because I always thought early in your career you weren't given enough credit for the quality of your stuff.
Yeah.
Location, they talked a lot, but the quality of your stuff was really, really good. And give me an idea of what you were throwing in terms of, you know, the percentage that you had in the tank. And was there times, maybe it was each time you took the ball, that you sort of paced yourself in terms of velo, knowing you were probably going to get the same hitters out three or four times?
You never really paced yourself, but you had to do something a little different the third and fourth time through the lineup. You know, hopefully you pitched inside enough. You know, in a perfect world, when it's late in the game, you realize you're a little tired, so you have to rely on your command more than your velocity. And at the same time, your changeup's usually probably going to be better than your breaking ball. So, you know, that was something I understood. So, you know, the first two times through the lineup, if I could stay away from, you know, throwing too many fastballs away, I wanted to show the guys in. I wanted to show them a breaking ball because I knew later on in the game that I was going to have more success throwing fastballs away and changeups. So I didn't want to abuse that the first couple times through the lineup.
And I mentioned the fact that I remember you telling me once when you were in trouble, you thought about not throwing harder, but locating better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, execution wins. I know velocity is nice and big sliders are nice, but, you know, execution still wins even in today's game. You know, the pitcher that's going out there and executing the most quality pitches is the one that's going to win. You know, I always told the guys, look, it's not a speed contest. It's a pitching contest. You know, if that was the case, Nolan Ryan would have went, you know, 500-0. Nobody threw harder than him. So, you know, you have to be able to execute pitches and, you know, get your breaking ball down and locate some fastballs.
Quick question, too. I mean, okay, your overarching philosophy, you go out there, you start the game. To get, I mean, you were famous for going through 8-9 innings with a limited number of pitches. Hitter comes up to the plate. Obviously, your first thought is not to strike him out, but to elicit soft contact, put the ball in play early, make your defense play, or how did you, what was your overarching philosophy with that?
I mean, it's pitch selection, you know.
Okay.
You can't get a strikeout until two strikes anyway. So most of the time you're trying to get strike one or two. So you know, it was what's the safest pitch to throw? What's the easiest pitch I can throw right now to get a strike? And if he hits it, it stays in front of the outfield. You know, that was how I did my pitch selection. And, you know, the hitter would determine that or the count, you know. And then two strikes, again, you know, you try to beat them with location. And, you know, you accidentally get a lot of strikeouts that way. You know, you're not necessarily trying to strike the guy out, but, you know, there's something in the back of your mind going, if I put that ball right there, he might not swing at it. So, you know, it was just really tried to keep it simple. 0-2, I figured it was the hardest. It's the hardest count to hit in. So I always thought that's the easiest count to throw a strike in. You know, so maybe hit 0-2. It's the hardest count to hit it. You know, I never understood the setup pitch or the waste pitch. You know, that made no sense to me. You know, it's, you know, every time you throw a setup pitch or a waste pitch, it puts a lot of pressure on the next pitch if you don't execute it. So, you know, why give away a free pitch?
Greg, I remember late in your career in spring training, you're with the Padres, and David Wells was there as well. And the two of you were having a conversation, and somehow you got around to talking about all the complete games both of you threw in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Greg Maddux wasn't in the minors for a long time, but he had 17 complete games in the minor leagues. Most pitchers are getting to the big leagues now without ever seeing even the seventh inning, without ever seeing a 100th pitch.
Yeah.
Give me your take on where you think the game has gone in terms of dialing back the workloads of starting pitchers, even in terms of how much rest they get as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a fine line between developing and also teaching the guys how to win. You know, I think you have to teach winning as you're developing. And, you know, that's the one thing that I didn't see in the minor leagues. I've been to a few games even in Vegas the last couple of years. The AAA team of the A's is out there, and you don't see players doing things to win. It's more like, well, I got 70 pitches and I need to throw 22% off speed. And, you know, I need to throw, you know, 5% fastballs up. You know, it seems like it's not, let's read the hitter or the situation and execute a pitch off of that. It just seems too prescripted. And, you know, I would love to see the minor league coaches like develop their players in how to win baseball games instead of just how to stay healthy and, you know, throw the number of pitches they're supposed to throw.
Your two seamer, your front hip to the lefty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I saw you like a little bit, and even in instructionally back in the day too, because I was with the Angels then, but that is beautiful. That's Kyle Hendricks has some of that in him also. That's been very successful in the changeup off of that. How did you develop that? When did that come about? Who was the instigator? I love watching that. We all do. Bartolo Colon. I used to sit in a room with Bart, and he would just play front hip comebackers on lefties and giggle the whole time.
Yeah, he
was. It's a beautiful, and a lot of guys aren't. Is it courageous enough? Do they work on it enough? But I mean, if I'm a righty and I could come back a lefty like that, man, and freeze him up.
Yeah.
Wow. What a weapon.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because, you know, the old school of thought was you can't pitch a lefty down and in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was a very young pitcher, and I tried that pitch with two strikes. Of course, it leaked over the middle, and the guy hit it out. And, you know, I kind of got scolded a little bit. What are you doing messing around down and in to a lefty? And sure enough, man, that night I'm watching the Dodger game, and Hershiser's pitching, and he's doing it. And I saw Oral, you know, get about two or three punch outs that night throwing that pitch. And, you know, had a conversation with my coach the next day and said, you know, I don't want to give up on that pitch. I want to keep throwing it. And
good for you.
You know, if you throw it, I mean, it helps. It helps if you can throw it.
Greg, give us an idea besides when you're not playing golf, what you're doing these days. I know for a while there you have been working with a lot of young pitchers. You still have your hand in baseball.
You know what? No, not this spring. I didn't really do anything. We actually had our first grandkid about 10 days ago. So I wanted to be around for that. I was with the Rangers the year before with my brother down there for, you know, about 20 days of spring training, 25 days. And I kind of missed it, you know, but wanted to be home next to the kids and see my first grandkid being born. And, you know, we travel around a little bit. We spend some time in California and, you know, watch a lot of Netflix.
Me. God, we live the same life. My God, only I'm not as good at golf as you are.
Hey, Greg, before we let you go here, you know, Major League Baseball has put together, they've gathered about 100 different experts in the field when it comes to biomechanics, coaching, doctors, trainers, managers, you name it. They're trying to get their arms around the issue here and where they go forward from here to try to keep pitchers healthier. If I include you in this group, you're Greg Maddux. You pitched 23 years without an arm injury. I want to hear what Greg Maddux has to say about how we move this game forward. What kind of suggestions, ideas could you offer?
Well, I mean, all you can do is speak from experience. You know, I think, you know, the decades before we got there, the pitchers were throwing 300 innings a year. You know, we were trying to get to like 230, 240. The guys before us were throwing over 300. So, you know, that's just kind of the way the game has been going, you know, for the last, you know, few decades. And, you know, it's a shame. I don't really have an answer why these guys are getting hurt. I mean, it's easy to say they're overthrowing or they're trying to throw it too hard, you know, but you watch somebody like Jacob deGrom and you watch him throw and it's an easy 98 coming out of his hand. He's not overthrowing, but it's still 98. So, you know, that's a tough question. You know, I think that's best left up to the medical guys and all that. But I know if you're able to repeat your delivery, I think your arm will learn to take care of itself.
Well said. Greg Maddux, always a pleasure. No one knows the art of pitching and did it better than Greg Maddux. Thanks so much for joining us on the Book of Joe podcast. And good luck. Bring back a trophy from this weekend at Las Colinas.
Okay, I will. I'll buy a shirt in the pro shop. I'll take that home with me.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Our thanks to Greg Maddux, all-time winningest pitcher alive. 355 wins in the major leagues. And most astonishing, given today's climate, 23 years in the big leagues, 5,000 innings without an arm injury.
That is incredible.
Thanks to Greg Maddux. And we'll wrap up this edition of the Book of Joe when we get back.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Book of Joe podcast with me, Tom Verducci, and Joe Madden. Well, Joe, that was, it's always fascinating. I've always said, people ask me a lot of times, you know, who are your, what interviews to you are your favorite over the years? And Greg Maddux is always one for me because I always feel like each time I talk to him, I learn something, you know, and that's what I want to do as I cover Major League Baseball. I want to learn how these guys do what they do. I want to learn inside the game. I don't want the superficial stuff. And Greg Maddux is playing 3D chess. That's what he did on the mound. And, you know, I always learn something from him. So I'm curious for you, Joe, listening to Greg talk about this issue here. What stood out for you from his perspective on pitching today?
Well, he kind of agrees with what we had been saying regarding the velocity and the chasing of velocity and how that kind of leads to the issues that we're in. And then on top of that, he talked about pitching over throwing. And that's what he did also. I saw him, like I said, in instructional leagues. I saw him as a very young pitcher. Didn't realize at that time I wasn't that good of a scout that he's going to be as great as he turned out to be in the fact that he was going to go all that way without injury. But again, he wants to do it in simple terms, do simple, better. His method's so easy. You know, day after, walk a lot, get the soreness out, then have a side day, but I took it off if I wasn't feeling that good. I would work on things specifically on my side day and then two more days, and then he would pitch. Pretty simple. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on there. He'd pick up the other team in regards to scouting and how he would do it. But the simplicity of it really stands out to me. And I, as you know, do simple better. I'm all about it. There's not a whole lot going there. And I know some of his, I knew one of his pitching coaches, in particular, Mr. Dick Pohl. And I know Mr. Pohl did things, and I could see those two guys hitting it off because things were kept simple and to the point, and not a lot of fluff and fanfare. It was just pitching. It was baseball and athlete. He was a hitter. He did everything. Him and that group of Atlanta pitchers were all good golfers, apparently, too. They were athletes, man, and they did things athletically, and it wasn't a training situation that took them away from being baseball players. So I know that's not done in that manner anymore. Specialization is specialization, and we always – oftentimes, I guess people think it's better, but he just also explained the liberal arts component of growing up. He played all the sports, different body movements, didn't get stale, heard different voices, different coaches, learned different things, all this stuff that I, you know, for me is accurate and the right way to do things. So maybe validated some of my points to myself, but I'd love to see that resurface on a minor league level. And again, more minor league players, more minor league pitchers with different skill sets, including deception, as being part of this cachet of pitchers we're trying to raise and understand that velocity's kind of groovy, but it breaks down.
Yeah, it's funny. You're mentioning the liberal arts training, if you will, for Greg Maddux playing multiple sports growing up, taking ground balls in the infield, shagging in the outfield, right? Touching field days on the mound, throwing, not trying to max things out with an iPad behind you, but the spin rate was. Mm-hmm. But that also included playing golf. I mean, these guys, the Braves pitchers, played a ton of golf. I even played with them a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as they told me, you know, that meant getting up early, going to these really nice courses, which means they weren't out late. They took care of themselves. But I think getting out there and playing golf was part of that liberal arts training you're talking about, Joe. And I remember years ago, I think it was Claude Osteen was the pitching coach of the Texas Rangers. And he encouraged his pitchers to go out and play golf with him. You know, they'd have a little side bets and that put pressure on them. You know, they weren't conceding a 2-foot putt. Mm-hmm. The idea of competition, of freeing up the mind, that having the body move in different ways, there was a benefit to that. And I think, as you mentioned, it's a great word you mentioned, Joe, specialized. Our society, not just our sport, have become so specialized. Mm-hmm. We're doing one thing really well and missing out on what I call the humanities or the liberal arts of athletics.
Yeah, I mean, the part of it too is, okay, well, if you don't go play golf, or when they did go play golf, what does that mean? they weren't sleeping in. They weren't laying around a hotel room. They weren't just basically doing nothing. Their body wasn't moving at all. And as a latter part of my term as a manager is when I finally started playing some golf. And, man, I would get up early like that. I'd go play golf. And my body felt so much better for it. I'd come back, you take a nap, and you go to the ballpark. I think it's frowned upon because it's not understood. I mean, when I used to ride my bike every morning, I used to take my bike on the road for years. And I could ride my bike all morning, and I would go from Copley Square all the way up to Boston College and back, as an example, in the city of Boston. And that was looked upon as being, oh, that's pretty cool, that's groovy. But the moment you want to play golf, somehow it's considered leisurely or the point where you may get yourself tired. There's all these different preconceived notions that I don't agree with. Now, if you are, okay, if you're a regular player, it's harder to do that if you're a regular player often. But if you do it once in a while, I think it actually is beneficial as opposed to laying around all day. So that's what I do dig on that. I thought it was a great idea. I've talked to other pitchers about it primarily, but I do think there's something to be said for that, yes.
And Joe, I wanted to go back to something Greg said about Jacob DeGrom. Mm-hmm. Of course, Greg mentioned he worked with Texas last year with his brother, Mike Maddux, the pitching coach there. They know DeGrom firsthand. And DeGrom, to me, has thrown a baseball when he was healthy as well as anybody I've ever seen in my life. I'm not saying the best pitcher ever, but he raised the art, the power of pitching like nothing I've ever seen before. As Greg said, the ball came out of his hand easily in the upper 90s. He's throwing sliders at 95 as a starting pitcher. He basically brought closer stuff to the mound for six or seven innings. I've never seen that. Seen great pitchers, Greg Maddux included, but at the level he was doing it. But you know what, Joe? To me, that's not sustainable. And it's not because he had poor mechanics. As Greg said, easy gas coming out of his hand. But when you look at Jacob DeGrom, I mean, first of all, he's shredded. The way he takes care of his body is just crazy. He is a great athlete, played shortstop in college before becoming a full-time pitcher. The way his body moves through his delivery is very smooth. I don't see any red flags with it. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's like your Hellcat, Joe. I mean, the engine can only be so big in a chassis. And I think what's happening here, and Jake is a great example, and I love Jacob DeGrom, but I think he throws too hard for his own good. And by that, I mean the UCL just cannot withstand the torque that is being put upon it because we know so much about mechanics. We know so much about training. We know so much about nutrition. We know so much about how to add velocity with weighted balls and such that what you can't control is that little ligament that holds your elbow together.
You know, it looks effortless to us, and I've always been a fan of that. And then Zach Wheeler, I thought Zach Wheeler was the next Jake DeGrom in the making when I saw them both with the Mets. It's almost like you put that the ball on, I said, a conveyor belt. It was so easy. They would just drop it on and would just go wham to home plate. But having said all that, it looks easy. It appears to be easy, but who knows what it feels like internally? I'm not sure. I mean, some guys are just more fluid athletes than others. The bump and grinders of the world, like myself, you can see when I'm applying effort, but guys like DeGrom or Wheeler, you do not. Or let's go golf, Freddie Couples. I mean, here's a guy that you watch that swing, you go, oh my God, how does he hit the ball that far, whatever. But I guess his clubhead speed at the bottom was extraordinary. And of course, he repeated it all the time, but he did it easily. Any athlete that you watch and he performs in a manner that looks like he's doing it easily can be frustrating to those of us who do not, but that does not mean that there's not more effort involved than we actually think there is. So, and with DeGrom, I'm not sure, you probably know better. Does his arm go behind him at all with the elbow and stuff? I haven't really seen a slowdown picture of him. Because even if you have an easy method, that doesn't mean, you know, according to everything we've been talking about, that really highlights injuries or is involved in injuries. I don't really have a great picture of what his arm looks like behind him. So anyway, it is easy, but is it easy to him internally? I don't know. And I know, you know, a guy like Freddie Couples has had injuries over his career also, and who does it more easily than him? So it's hard to determine effort level just by watching it.
It's a great point. And as long as we're going to finish up here, and we had Greg Maddux here, who's playing at the Invited Celebrity Classic in Las Colinas this week, let's talk about golf. You brought it up, Joe, and Freddie
cool.
Couples.
I'm in.
watching the Masters, you know, it was great to see a guy like Scottie Scheffler, best player in the world, who's got a swing nobody would teach. it's not an analytical swing, right? I mean, the shuffling of the feet, he was lucky enough to find a good coach when he was 6 or 7 years old and had the same swing. That's the way his body moves. You watch someone like Max Homa, there's very little effort in his swing. And then you watch someone like Bryson DeChambeau, with a ton of effort in the swing. So, Joe, I know you talk about this a lot, but there's not a cookie cutter way to succeed. And I think what we all try to do is find the best version of ourselves. And that mostly means you're not mimicking something. You're not chasing a template. You're finding the best version of yourself and how your body moves.
That's what I hear when I hear good mechanics. What does that mean? I always said that. What does that mean? I mean, I think there's indigenous components to every body movement in regards to hitting a golf ball, throwing a baseball, hitting a baseball. What I often talk about as a hitter, when I was a hitting coach, I wanted all my hitters to look the same at the point of contact. Okay, how they got there didn't matter to me, but they had to look pretty much the same at the point of contact. And I always categorize that with an above average velocity fastball. You know, a lot of guys can get there against below average velocity, but I wanted guys to get there against plus velocity. And if I took a snapshot, regardless if they were Julio Franco, Paul Molitor, Carl Yastrzemski, all these different dudes that look different when they're in the batter's box, George Henrik, the close stance, they all look pretty much the same at the point of contact against plus velocity. So how do you describe your mechanics? For me as a hitting coach, I thought it was my job to look at somebody and to change them as little as possible. The way their body works is the way their body works. From there, I wanted to try to help them understand how to get to that point of contact on time against plus velocity, utilizing how their bodies move for the last 10 years. So when I hear about mechanics, I get confused sometimes, because does that mean you retool the way a guy throws to your sensibilities of how it's supposed to look, or do you take the way he has done it for years and incorporate thoughts into this movement that then permits him to throw more on time, be in that position that I want everybody to look like at the point of release by a couple little tweaks here and there? So that's how I did my hitters. That's how I worked with all my hitters. Weirdly example, Jimmy Edmonds just texted me yesterday, day before I'm riding a bike. He sent me videos of his kid as a hitter, and there was something he wanted to break down with this kid, and he wanted to know what I thought. So I went all the way back to Jim Edmonds, talking to him about what we talked about when he was in Vancouver. I don't even know what year it was, but Jimmy Edmonds' body was slightly different than his son's body, the way they set up, but there was a lot of similarities, man. So my advice is to not necessarily change a lot of that. You find the one key element that unlocks and makes the other four or five things you don't like work properly next in unison. So, woof, long answer, but that's where I get hung up when I hear about mechanics. What does it mean? Are you changing the way an arm stroke works to satisfy your sensibilities with this, or are you taking the way a young man's body and arm works and then attempt to clean it up in a sense to the point where he gets the most out of it? And then I think that's the best way to avoid injury.
Well said, Joe. And I'm going to have one final word on the Masters, and I want your take on it. Okay. Because I'm watching the Masters, and at one point I know there was a four-way tie for the lead. And watching it, I just knew Scottie Scheffler is going to win. Mm-hmm. He's the best player in the world. And what I see from Scottie Scheffler, he controls the golf ball so much better than everybody else. You know, if he's offline, he's offline by a little. He doesn't miss spots by a lot. So he doesn't have the blow-up holes that we saw in the back nine at Augusta from the people chasing him. So I think he's in a tree right now, Joe. I think he can continue to dominate the game for a long time. I love his approach. You know, he's this God-fearing, humble guy from Texas, actually born in New Jersey, moved there as a kid. Got to throw Jersey in there.
No doubt.
But as consistent a person, and he brings it to the golf course.
I would love to see videos of him swinging a golf club when he was 10. And I would bet that a lot of that stuff that he does now was apparent when he was 10. If some brilliant instructor came up to him and said, Scotty, what are you doing? You can't slide your feet around like that. You can't. We got to get your feet on the ground. We got to get a better base, different kind of turn. You just can't do that. Same if somebody had gone up to Stan Musial and said, Stanley, Stashu, that peekaboo stance, it's not going to work. We got to straighten you out. So that's, to me, I learned that from Bob Alou, Bob Clear. As a young hitting instructor, he really set me straight on that. And even when you talk about Troy Percival, the first time we threw him in the bullpen at Gene Autry Park, Percy went out there and he's get out in the mound. He's ready to throw. And Bob Alou said to us, nobody say anything to him. Percy, wind up and throw the ball to home plate. And that's how his body worked. And that's how he became successful, even though everybody said he was going to blow out a long time before it ever happened. So sometimes we get too smart, man. That's part of my problem.
Yeah, you bring me back to one of my favorite lines. I believe more players, I'm talking about amateurs mostly, have been ruined by overcoaching than undercoaching.
No doubt.
That being said, I want a line from you, Joe. Bring us to the close here. With a game that started with Greg Maddux is going to end with Joe Maddon closing for us here. What do you got?
Ooh, that's outstanding. I hope I don't screw it up on him. I got to read this slowly because this is like something I read and I switched it around a little bit as it pertains to what happened today or talking to Greg. Creativity is bound up in our ability to find new ways around old problems. Creativity is bound up in our ability to find new ways around old problems. I think creativity should be bound up in our ability to find old ways around new problems. That's not what happens. We're always looking for new ways around problems where maybe tried and true is okay. Why do we, and again, that's where I have an issue with the term progressiveness. We could have like progress move in negative terms too. Then nobody, it's called regression. And so I took that today and I want to switch it around from new ways around old problems to old ways around new problems and see if we could find some substance in that. And again, it's about balance and morphing things together, however you want to describe it. But I thought that was really cool when I read that and I thought it needed to be switched. I mean, you talk about Greg and pitching in general and what's going on. I think old ways could really help out with these new problems.
That really fits the theme of this show for today, our episode with Greg Maddux. I mean, you know, no matter how much you've been raised on analytics and TrackMan and Driveline, why wouldn't you listen to Greg Maddux? I mean, the wisdom he has on the art of pitching and staying healthy. Yeah, you want to call that old school? I just know that that's someone who has a lot of wisdom that I can learn from.
Cannot agree with you more. Listen, that and analytics, wonderful. And I finally think, I don't know if I told you this, and I finally kind of figured out a bit of where I was coming from with all this. Yes, we always wanted information and data as an old school manager, as a new school manager. Show me where my defense is supposed to play. How am I supposed to pitch to Tom Verducci? What is this pitcher possibly going to throw? Yes, I want all that information. We've always done that. People act as though it's new. It's just being able to be categorized differently, and every pitch is being tracked regarding defense or how to pitch, et cetera. So that's the difference. It's the glut of information, which is great, and also the exactness of it, which before was up to us from advanced scouts, pitch him highway, high up and in, down and away. Almost everybody had the same thought process. And when it came to pitchers pitching to the other team, I thought about this earlier, charting. Like Maddux would chart for Smoltz the day before he pitched. Nobody charts anymore, which I really think would be an interesting way to get these guys back involved in understanding exactly what's going on. So there is that, and you want that. And when I'm an acquired Tom Verducci, I want to know everything about him. But in the moment, that is big, large sample size. In the small sample size moment, in this at 7:52 on a Thursday night in June, I need to react to the situation. And that's where experience and wisdom, et cetera, comes into play. So that is the small sample size. That is called the moment. And the moment changes constantly. Count, you look at the scoreboard count, number of outs, where's the wind blowing, who's hot, who's not, all this stuff. So I don't know that we've totally described and people understand where the data and information is important and we all believe in it, but what's not always believed in is the wisdom and the intelligence, the feel for whomever's running this thing in the dugout and how important that actually is. So that came to me more recently, and I think it's pretty accurate.
Our thanks to the always fascinating, always interesting Greg Maddux for joining us on this edition of The Book of Joe. And thanks to you, Joe, for, as you always do, taking us home.
Thanks, Tommy. Great to see you, buddy.
The
The Book of Joe podcast is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network.
Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.